Hey there, listeners. It's been a while, and we are aware of that. Life has kind of gotten busy for both Mike and I, and it's just been taking some time to get this next season recorded. We thought rather than wait until we have everything done, we would just start releasing episodes as we have them. It might mean that we are recording and publishing at a bit of a choppy pace than you might be used to from us, but we wanted to get some of these episodes out that we recorded weeks or even months ago. We hope you enjoy. Thanks for your patience as we try and find the space to do this project that we both really love. Happy listening.
Two guys with no credentials.
Rolling Stone 500
Greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone. We are excited to be getting into the triple digits in a very real way here.
Woohoo!
101. We're excited to welcome you back here to our next block of albums. And this time we're revisiting an album at number 101. It's fallen quite a lot from its original ranking at 29 in the 2003 list and the 2012 list. This is the self-titled debut from Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, this is exciting. I mean, such an iconic band and very high up on the list, and it dropped significantly. Still 102, isn't it? We've talked, Ben, you know, trying to figure out why,
yeah.
Why do some albums do this? You know, are they less important? Are they less significant? The one thing I'll say is that Zeppelin 4, I believe, moved up.
So weird.
I think there are some, you know, we think about the younger listeners, people, you know, millennials who are making music. You know, I'm talking about people in the industry. I think, you know, songs like Stairway to Heaven and other things on Zeppelin 4, I think, have kind of stood the test of time and maybe become those classic songs that young people still listen to. Whereas maybe songs on this album maybe didn't, although it was so influential and important, kind of really jump-started the hard rock music of the 70s, in 1969, and of course was very significant to the people that were polled for the first list, you know, the critics and the people, the boomers and the Gen Xers, grew up with it. Maybe that's shifting a bit, but we're gonna, as we do, if you're new to this, you know, we already the list changed in 2020, so we decided to start over. But if we already recorded an album, a review rather, we just re-release it. But we do a little intro, and that's what we're doing now. As I recall, Ben, this was a very fun conversation. I think there was lots of laughs and lots of joking around. It is such a high-powered album, so much energy. Jimmy Page just blasting on the guitar. You know, face melting drums from John Bonham, and just a ton of fun, a fun record to listen to. I cannot imagine if you were a rock fan or a folk fan in 1969, putting this on the turntable and turning it up. Like, I can't imagine that feeling, what it would have been like. So different.
Yeah.
Different from the stuff that Page had done before, different than, you know, almost anything. It was more blues oriented than their later albums, and you hear that, but they put a new spin on blues that hadn't really happened.
We talk about albums that grab you with their first track, and the way that Good Times Bad Times opens with the guitar riff, and then the hi-hat and the drum that starts to come in, the fills, it's almost instant that, you know, okay, I'm gonna ride here, better hold on. And I think that first track just really feels like Zeppelin. It's no one else. And you know, time, playing with timing, exceptional talent on all of the instruments, and even some harmonies thrown in there for a good measure. It's a really fun way to to lift that Zeppelin into the sky.
and I've talked about this before, and you're probably getting sick of me saying this, when a debut band, a band comes out with their debut album, and the first track and the first few bars introduces all the members in such an amazing way. I talked about the Doors, on their first album, doing that, kind of everybody
introducing
comes in.
Each other.
You happen here. You get the guitar, the drums, then the bass coming in, and of course Robert Plant, all within a few bars. It's like, here's who we all are. Here's what you're gonna get, and let's rock and roll. Just awesome. So. I don't really know. I don't have a whole lot else to say. it's such a classic band, and I feel like, and I'll talk about this more, I'm sure, when you listen to the review. But I feel like I knew some of the other songs on the other albums better than this, and I think that's maybe a sign of my age. I feel like there's a lot of people older who grew up with it who were more familiar with their debut, and it was a little more beloved. I don't know if that's 100% accurate. Of course, all their albums are amazing, but this was. I think when we listened to it, I hadn't listened to it track by track before all the way through, although I was very familiar with a lot of it. So do you have anything else to add, Ben? Any kind of memories of this album or kind
no,
of?
I think I remember, this was not an album that I'd spent much time with, but I think I remember thinking, wow, there's some big songs on here. Songs that often appear on Zeppelin Greatest Hits collections. And some other really good stuff here too that makes it a better album than I think I was anticipating, even though it was highly ranked on that 2012 list. I was not expecting it. I think we probably talk about this. I would have expected Zeppelin 4 to be in its spot. And so I think this ranking makes a bit more sense to me, but it's not to say this isn't good. It's actually really good. And I'm a bit surprised that it's fallen as much as it has. But I think you're onto something there with millennials and the shifting understanding of this band and, the general movement of this list away from prioritizing late 60s rock, despite how good it is.
Right. Can't disagree with any of that. That's well said.
It's been a while for us too, I'm looking forward to revisiting this one and to hear what we even said way back then.
Maybe our voices will sound more youthful when you listen to it.
Yeah, maybe they'll crack a little. Is that what you mean?
Because it wasn't that long
back before our voices were changing.
Before we had both hit the 4-0.
There you go.
Anyways, we hope you enjoy this re-release of our review, and then stick around for it. And what do we got coming up next week, Ben?
Good question. We are getting into a new review, but not a band we haven't been with before. This is another self-titled album. This one from The Clash, 1977's The Clash. So we'll see. We'll see what we can learn about punk's origin, I guess, when we check this one out.
That's funny coincidence. Back-to-back self-titled debuts.
Self-titled albums,
Right, so stick around. Listen to our re-release, and I hope you come back next week for The Clash. Led Zeppelin 1 coming up right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Ben, and you're listening to the Sound Logic Podcast.
This is Mike. Each episode, we discuss one of music's greatest albums from Rolling Stone magazine's Top 500 list.
Brought to you by two guys with no credentials.
And welcome back, everyone. Today we're discussing album number 29 from Rolling Stone's top 500 album list, which is Led Zeppelin by, you guessed it, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Commonly referred to as Led Zeppelin 1, even though it doesn't say 1 anywhere, but everyone calls it 1.
Right. We may have also introduced them as the New Yardbirds, because I think their name came just as they were recording this, but they had crafted a few of these songs under the moniker of the New Yardbirds. So,
yes, they toured, and we'll get into this later, but Jimmy Page had to finish his tour by contract, and some of the other guys had already taken off, so he toured with the Zeppelin guys, actually it might have been all of them, in that last summer before they recorded in 68, and they were called the New Yardbirds, and they did some of their new material, which would appear on Led Zeppelin. As the new Yardbirds, or you're
and
right.
Since they've got so many self-titled albums, maybe we should call this Led Zeppelin by the New Yardbirds to avoid confusion with the other Led Zeppelin albums.
Well, I think there's only two that are self-titled, because there's Led Zeppelin 2, Led Zeppelin 3, which are actually called 2 and 3. Led Zeppelin 4 doesn't say 4 anywhere. There's four symbols, which people speculate meant to mean four, and some people call it Zozo, which, because one of the symbols kind of says Zozo on it, Z-O-S-O, but that one's technically self-titled as well, but everyone calls it four, and everyone I know calls this one one. So welcome back, everyone. We're talking about Led Zeppelin 1 by Led Zeppelin, aka Led Zeppelin, aka the New Yardbirds.
Perfect.
Have you listened to this album before?
No, this was a new one for me. A couple of familiar songs. I'm far more familiar with Zeppelin 4. Not exactly sure why. Maybe it was just the one that was on sale when I was thinking about adding a Zeppelin album to my collection.
Stairway to Heaven, Rock and Roll, Black Dog. Like, I think those are some of their most prolific songs for people who aren't really into them.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, I think so too. And actually, I think that right there is going to be an undercurrent of this episode for me. I'm a little perplexed. I skipped around their early records here this week as I was getting ready. And 2 is great. 3 is great. 4 is great. I'm really interested in why this first debut album rises above all the rest, when they've got so many other good ones too. And hopefully by the time we get to, Was It Sound Logic, we can come up with some rationale for why that is, as we go through this process.
Yeah, I think that's going to come up again. Interesting. I think we'll talk about, you know, the same thing we talk about all the time, influence and how the list was created. But,
How about you? Was this a new one for you?
Well, listening to the album start to finish was new. I had never actually done that. However, I was familiar with pretty much all the tunes. My brother-in-law is really into Zeppelin, and I've heard a lot of this stuff over the years. I don't know. Zeppelin's one of those bands where there's a lot of songs on the radio now that have become regular radio songs, but weren't ever singles.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how that happens, or, you know, but there are songs on the radio that were not singles. Yeah. So I know some of those too. So I knew probably three quarters of this album, but hadn't listened to it in that album format. So that part of it was new, and some of the songs we're not familiar with. So, I always really appreciate hearing how the band decided to lay it all out. So that was probably the part of it that was new. I didn't get into Zeppelin till a little later, like in my teens and early 20s. It was kind of like the Stones. It was a band I was familiar with, but just was never compelled to really get into them or buy an album. So I didn't have any albums till later in my 20s. My brother-in-law, Andrew, bought me my first Zeppelin CD, I think, for Christmas one year. It was Zeppelin III, okay, which I think is an interesting choice, but I think it was one of his favorites, or maybe it was on sale somewhere. But that was my first one. I really like that. It's got like Immigrant Song on it, some other cool stuff. And then I think he also got me two, and I think I bought some other ones. I've bought four and Houses of the Holy, but I never got Zeppelin one. So listening to it as an album, that part is new.
We've got lots of rambling thoughts about compilation albums, but this was a band where I wanted a compilation album, and until somewhat more recently, they'd never put one out. And so in high school, I had a friend Phil, who was a guest just a couple of episodes ago for the Joshua Tree, put together a mix CD, just as sort of burnable CDs were coming out, I guess, of some Zeppelin songs. And so I think my first influence was that. It was a sampling of what Phil thought I should be aware of from their catalog. And it had lots of great stuff on it. I think then when we were in college, or maybe soon after, Zeppelin released a 3-disc box set called How the West Was Won. And so I think that's where I get most of my understanding of the spectrum of their career. And it was kind of interesting to tackle this album in particular, knowing that it was the sort of beginning point for this band, especially as someone who generally looks down upon greatest hits albums. It actually felt like long overdue to go back and start at the beginning and work through their music as it was released.
You want some details?
Yeah, let's get to some details.
Details, 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 details. This album was released January 12th, 1969. Also, same year, later in the year, Zeppelin II came out. We've talked so many times that they're just cranking out the music, because this album was recorded in 68 and most of the music was, you know, was all, they had written it while they were touring. They had already done, I think, three or four of the songs already. Two of them are covers.
Yep.
So they had started playing them. So I think that's a great way, as a new band, you have your, you mix in a couple well-known like blues classics into your album, so people have something they're familiar with too, to kind of get them into it. So this was Led Zeppelin's debut album. They had toured together under the name of the New Yardbirds, because Jimmy Page was in the Yardbirds before. He was contractually obligated to finish the tour in Scandinavia, and the other members had split, or for some reason, I think he had the rights to the name. So he had to stick around and do the tour. So he got these guys. He had played with, I think, Bonham or Jones. Actually, it was Jones. Jones. John Paul Jones and someone else knew Plant. And then they had played with Bonham before, so they all got together. And then when they finished touring, they went to the studio, already having a bunch of ideas and songs they had performed. Total, Jimmy Page said it took 36 hours to do it. And then he mixed it himself, which is just crazy.
Apparently the amount of time that it took, they know that specifically because they were charged by the hour and they were footing the bill. They still didn't have a firm record deal, and so it was all sort of out of pocket. So they were trying to crush through this as fast as they could. And so they've got an...
Yeah, the studio was charging them for the
they've
time,
they've got an invoice that says they were billed for 36 hours of studio time.
That's great. So Jimmy Page wrote most of this, with some tracks having credits from various other members. And then You Shook Me was a Muddy Waters song, which he did. And I Can't Quit You Baby was a Willie Dixon song. Yeah. So that's that kind of blues influence there. This went to number 10 on Billboard in the US. Total worldwide sales to date is over 11 million, so not too shabby. Rolling Stone at the time criticized this album, called it limited, Page's production being limited and Plant singing foppish. Do you know what that means?
No.
I was going to Google that. I don't know what that means. Foppish? Sounds negative anyways. But obviously they've changed their tune because they put it in the number 29 album, best album of all time. Yeah. So,
apparently, someone who's foppish is concerned with their clothing and appearance. It's sort of like it could be substituted for vain. So, yeah, I don't know how that applies to music, but.
Well, I mean, they're right, but.
Most artists?
That doesn't mean it's not good.
Most artists probably think the song is about them, right?
I guess this is the beginning of 70s rock bands, but I would describe all 70s rock lead singers as that.
Right, yeah.
Like, isn't that all of them? Yeah. You can hang out with people in a band, knowing that they're in a band, and just hang out and go out to dinner, and you can tell, without anybody saying anything about their instrument, you can tell what everybody plays.
Yeah.
By the way they behave and act and dress. And yeah, you could definitely pick out the lead singer in a 70s rock band. This is the birth. To me, this is the birth of 70s rock.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it.
I think that's
true. We'll get into that later.
Yeah. But. Well, and I think we should say, as we're going over some details here, that we're coming out of the sort of, pivotal point of rock and roll, the late 60s, lots of bands are breaking apart and reforming, and sort of super groups are happening. And I've seen mm-hmm. some reflections that say the reason that it was sort of underwhelming for critics at the time is that they were being introduced to all these super groups that everyone was just sort of gaga over. And so if you didn't have the right kind of blend of, you know, people who'd been successful many other times in their career coming together, it was kind of hard even to just be noticed. It's sort of hard to imagine a time now where Led Zeppelin isn't just enormous, but there was a time when, you know, those four names that are
doing it.
Sort of iconic rock names now, right? Plant, Page, Jones, and Bonham. That could be one of those t-shirts with just the four names in a row, and people would automatically say, Zeppelin, right? And it sort of feels like a supergroup now, but there was a time where it really wasn't, and that was what they were up against.
Yeah, lots of groups were doing it. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, like that was a supergroup. Yeah. They had all been in bands before. Yeah. Bands like Cream.
I mean, even the Yardbirds, right, launched a bunch of different guitarists, Clapton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah. For sure. So, yeah, I guess if everyone's doing it, it just becomes kind of white noise and whatever. Here's another band. And they never had a U.S. number one hit. So even at the time, like, they were big, but there were other things that were bigger. And I think with Zeppelin, like a lot of other bands too, they got bigger later. Their career has continued to blossom from when they started and from after they stopped. Yep. Like they're legendary. Anyways, don't want to get too far ahead. But I like what you said about supergroups. That's a good segue into us talking about the album cover. And this was an album cover for me that, because the words Led Zeppelin are so small, I never remember what the album cover for Zeppelin 1 looks like. So I had never really remembered that this was it. But this is the one for Zeppelin 1. It's a picture of a Zeppelin. It is a picture of the Hindenburg taken moments after it exploded in 1937 in Paris. The image has been altered a bit. They've changed. It's black and – well, it was black and white originally, but it changed kind of – there's a little grainy. It's shadowy. Some descriptions of it were very phallic. It's phallic looking. And there was someone writing in Rolling Stone – again, not one at the time, but one, you know, reviewing it in the 2000s, said the cover – encapsulates the feel of the music inside. It's got sex, catastrophe, and things blowing up. So that's all kind of, you can read that all into the cover. So
the one that most of us are familiar with has a red font, but apparently it was originally produced with a sort of teal blue font.
I didn't know that.
In your quest for
that's worth a lot of money.
A record collection, I guess. If you ever see one with blue, just pay whatever the asking price is, because it was the
sure.
the original and now the most sought after by collectors.
Will do. So because the name was so new, because they didn't have the name till they were recording, they wanted the image to have something to do with the name. And the story for the name is that Page and Plant, and maybe some of the other guys, were together. I don't know if this was an official meeting or they were just having drinks with Keith Moon and John Entwistle, drummer and bassist respectfully for The Who. And this was actually, no, sorry, let me go back a bit. This was, I think, before the band was totally formed, because Keith Moon and John Entwistle were considering joining Page and Plant, or maybe Page and Jones, but I think it was Page and Plant, to create a supergroup. And Keith Moon said, if I joined, it would probably go down like a lead balloon. And John Entwistle piped up, a Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a joke, but then that stuck and it became the name. Many, many years later, they actually got sued by a lady who was part of the Zeppelin. She was an heiress to the Zeppelin empire, and she was trying to sue them because they're using the name, the family name, right? So, so interesting, but so iconic, Led Zeppelin. Get the lead out, you know, like all this stuff. Again, not an iconic cover. I think it is for a lot of people. This is interesting to take a famous picture from history and put it on your album cover.
Yeah, and it makes sense why, I guess, tying it to the name. But it is a bold move. Yeah.
pretty bold. And that was a horrific catastrophe, right? Like, it wasn't like, you know, just something that happened isolated. Like, I'm pretty sure lots of people lost their lives in that horrible accident. So to put it that's very rock and roll, right? Yep. To put that on, like, you know, I think of Rage Against the Machine with the picture of the
guy burning.
The monk, the monk who's self-immolated, right? Like, this is like, whoa, this is sending like a crazy message.
Not what we strive for. But the name is not what they strive for either, right? The name is sort of this self-inflicting, like, we're probably never going anywhere. So why not put something tragic on the cover? It's not going to happen.
It's great. I love the lore of it. Yeah. It almost makes it a little mythological, and I really like
it. I'm surprised to hear you say that it's not a standout cover for you, Mike. I can never remember which numbers the albums are, which number goes with which.
That's what I mean.
But I know that it's an iconic Zeppelin album image. Until embarking on this particular album, I would have been like, oh, it's probably one of the numbered ones.
I think the only one that really sticks out to me, or I have a lot of them now, but previously was Houses of the Holy, because it's got this weirdly colored image of these naked children climbing up the rocks, right? And it's just like so far out there. My son calls it the one with the naked blue people on it. But yeah, for many years, I get them all mixed up. Zeppelin 3 is the one, and we can talk about it now because it's not on the 500 list. The original, it's a bunch of circles with different pictures in them. And there's a wheel behind the cover. You can spin it. So there's a little, you know, like on the side of the album, you can spin it so that there's the circles on the front of it are cut out, so you can spin the wheel that's moving behind the circles, and you can change the images that fit in the circle.
Whoa, yeah, that's
it's
cool.
Like sticky fingers stones with the working zipper. This one you can actually spin it, and it changes the images behind.
There's that's a little, really
yeah.
cool.
So if huh. again, if you're out there and you find. Because any of the reprints of the album don't have that. It's just a static image. But if you get an original one, and I don't know how many of the later pressings they did the same one, but I think it was just the original. However many 100,000 they did the first one, you can spin that. It's pretty cool.
Interesting.
So if you're out there looking for records, you find that. You grab that one. Same with the sticky fingers with the working zipper. And the Led Zeppelin with the blue teal. We got to make a list of all the things you got to watch for at garage sales. And So anyways, Zeppelin 1, right? Cool.
Zeppelin 1. Here we are.
I think you're going to have to bring me back in a few times. I'm going to be all over the map. Zep. Track listing?
Yeah.
Okay. 9 tracks. And
seems like a theme.
They're awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned this. If you're starting to get some tracks that are a little longer, you're only going to have like 8 or 9 or 10 because the format only holds it. It's an LP. It holds what it holds.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, nothing like that. There's a physical space that fits that groove. Yeah. You can only put so much. And really, I think it's about time. Because the grooves are going to be a certain width, so just it's just time. Anyways,
well, it makes me wonder too how many. And this is a bit of a tangent for another day, maybe. But how many great bands had a song that was like 8 minutes, and it would have bumped the song 3 minutes over the album time, and so it never got put on, or they had like 2 really good 3 minute songs, but they only had 5 minutes left, and so they chose a 4 minute song that wasn't as good.
Sure.
Oh, those kinds of things. It just because of the, and who knows, maybe that's why we get some of these quasi bloated double albums that probably should have been a single album. But I'm fascinated by those stories that are probably lost because of the technology, don't really happen anymore.
Well, just, you know, we think about some of these incredibly iconic and legendary albums, and it could have been one conversation. Got to pick 2 tracks, or we got to pick one of these 2. Which one? Well, I like this one, and that's it. Yep. And then it's in the history books forever, right? Like, that's a big decision. So, okay, 9 tracks.
Do you want to just go through one at a time?
Yep, okay. We can do that.
Track 1.
Okay, good times, bad times. To me, this song is all about the drumming. Drumming.
I think it sets a tone that this band is not afraid of timing. There's
lots of different types of timing, right?
Different types of timing. Yep, and different timings for each instrument too. They're willing to have all kinds of experimentation going on. It's such a hook song too. Like, it is the perfect song to start an album, and at a very reasonable 2:46. I know there are a couple other shorter songs on this album, but I think of Zeppelin and I think like 5 to 8 minute rock anthems, not
the next 3 right songs in. Are all over 6 minutes. That's long. That's not a radio song.
Right.
So this gets you in, introduced to the band, and then we're off. Like in and out, like prom night.
Yeah.
Like, it's way we go.
And this was the only single from the album, is that correct?
Yes, because they wanted to. They didn't want to release a single or didn't have the money, and but they had to or were encouraged to promote it. But this is what I was saying. Since, like, you hear this stuff on the radio now, because eventually people just wanted to hear it and play it.
Yeah.
Like Dazed and Confused is on the radio, and, you know, Communication Breakdown.
Right.
Like, interesting. Communication Breakdown, was that a B-side for this? I think it was.
I'm not sure. It's fascinating because, you know, they don't want to release singles. I think there was part of it that didn't want to play into the consumerism mentality of the industry. You know, we're making our art, like, let us make art and don't confine us. But their single is amazing. Like, it, their single might be the best song on the album, at least in my opinion. As a sort of radio hit, and I think, like, I would have loved to hear them aiming for sort of a chart topping single filled album. Like, give me 9 tracks of Good Times Bad Times, just in different kind of formats, and it would have been really cool. I love the other stuff too, but
singles back then. Remember, this is there's no, you know, you're probably not getting a TV spot. There's no internet. There's no Facebook. There's none of that. You can't put stuff out and have it just out there. If you put something up on YouTube, like, millions of people have seen it in seconds.
Yeah.
If you want it out there, it's out there. But you can't make somebody turn the radio on.
That's, like, true.
It's got to be on. So, you know, can you imagine if you're a Yardbirds fan? And all of a sudden, you know, you haven't been tuning into, you know, going to the, getting the special magazines or whatever, that you would maybe find news or tuning into special radio shows to find out what happened at the Scandinavia tour. Cause you'd have to be a pretty hardcore fan to have that much info. You didn't get the info like we get it now. So you turn on the radio and they're like, new band from Jimmy Page, this is called Led Zeppelin. Here's Good Times, Bad Times. And you hear this and you're a Yardbirds fan, like, your mind is going to just blow up all over the place. And that guitar playing is, like, insane. This is, like, you know, this is not, we don't have 70s guitarists and guitar bands yet. We've got Jimi Hendrix and we've got really good blues guitarists like Clapton. This is, like, woo, this is right up there with those guys.
Right.
And it's wild. It's not a regular blues solo. It's just a wild, crazy, crazy stuff with all the drumming, the crazy vocals. It's you're right. I think you're right. I think it might be the best song on the album. It's certainly the one that grabs you, and it is the obvious choice for a single.
If there's going to be one, yeah. And I guess. I got to watch what I say here because I wasn't around in 1969, and Jimi Hendrix was about to sort of make a massive splash too. But I imagine this is, like you said, not just for Yardbird fans, but I'm guessing this sounded like nothing else that was on the radio just in general.
No, like, it's crazy. It's just way out there. Well, and when I was young and saying, like, talking to my parents or people of my parents' generation about heavy metal or hard rock.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you mean Zeppelin? And my response was like, well, that's classic rock.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, like, classic rock is, like, you know, like Doobie Brothers. Yeah. And I don't know, like light stuff, like yacht rock. Right. But this is hard rock. You know, this was heavy.
Yeah, and I think it's held up pretty well as heavy. Like, I think the kids who wear Slayer t-shirts are still wearing Zeppelin t-shirts too.
Of course they are.
Because it does have some, like, punch that hasn't really softened over time. I think you're right. There's stuff on here that is solidly fitting into what I think of when I think classic rock. But it is also much harder than a lot of classic rock too.
Yeah, I think technology, you know, is again the big thing that changes. Yeah. Like, you know, Page is playing a Les Paul or an SG with, you know, with distortion at the time, you know, whereas you get into the 80s and 90s, you're going to get, you know, someone playing an Ibanez with, like, a heavy, crazy crunch metal distortion, which you wouldn't have heard in the 70s. But a lot of the style of it is very similar.
But it is a good segue then into track two, because that's pretty much acoustic guitar driven. So we're still in that, like, late 60s. To be a real band, you've got to have acoustic guitar in there somewhere. So even though you've got that crunching electric guitar on track one, and even though Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You is a pretty up-tempo, aggressive song, it's powered by a consistent acoustic guitar sound all the way through.
It's finger picking. It's almost classical for the first half of it. Then they get into the chorus, and you have that crunch. See, that sound almost reminds me of like a Rolling Stone sort of crunch, because they were one of the first to do like a Fuzz Stone, like Satisfaction. So that's like kind of a crunchiness there with the rhythm guitar. So now we're on to track two.
We've changed tone.
Major tack one.
Sort of upbeat, good times, bad times, to suddenly we're in a minor key. It's long and it's drawn out. And lots of wailing too.
And when we get to the break with the drums, and when those like power chords come in, do 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 do. I cannot listen to this song without thinking of 25 or 6 to 4 by Chicago. You know this song?
Yeah, I've never drawn the two together before.
You know that song? Okay. And subsequently, although it's a different rhythm, Brain Stew by Green Day. Different rhythm, but exact same chords and progression. And in fact, in my listening experience, I listened to them in that opposite order. I heard Brain Stew first.
Yeah.
You know, listened to Green Day in like 1994. And then I heard, you know, Chicago somewhere. And then I heard, because this is not like Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You is more of a deep cut for Zeppelin. If you're not a Zeppelin fan. Well, if you're not a Zeppelin fan, I don't think you've heard it. If you don't have the album, I doubt you've heard this song.
Oh, come on. It's on Q107.
Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Not these days. Maybe at one point. But I don't... I think it would be... If you get a casual classic rock listener to list, you know, 5 to 10 Zeppelin songs, well, I think this is not going to make more lists.
That's true. Yeah, it doesn't have the, you know, word association, name a Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven. You know, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You is not there. But I think that that is iconic classic rock radio, I think. That chorus. You're right. It might not be as...
because of Chicago.
I think it's also this song. I think this song gets some play. Okay. I could be wrong, but I don't know where else I would have heard it if not, because I've never listened to this album all the way through. Maybe it's on How the West Was Won, but it's definitely a very familiar song to me. Boy, you made me pause there for a minute. Now I got to figure this out a little bit.
Listen, you know what? I'm talking about, like, we listen to that album, or sorry, that radio station at work a lot. Like, every day, we kind of listen to one radio station in the morning and one in the afternoon. So it's on all the time. So I'm just speaking in experience of today, what that radio station is playing today. Because it changes every 2 or 3 years. They totally change the format and change the playlist. So that's just one radio station in one city in one era. So, you know, that I'm not going to really... defend it too hard, because you could be absolutely right, and there could be another province or state or city where they play this song like every day.
It's possible that it was from another spot that I've lived and classic radio there, or maybe it was on that mix CD that Phil made for me too. I don't know.
Okay, well, so I wasn't going to bring this up because it's a little obscure, but I have this hilarious memory, and I don't know if you were there when Steve and Phil moved off the farm into your grandparents' place. And Phil and Steve lived in the basement. They didn't really have a bedroom. They just had like mattresses on the floor. And I remember we were playing, I think Chris, it was Phil and Steve and Chris for sure. And I don't know if you were there. They were playing Name That Tune and they were doing Just Zeppelin. And they would push play. And I think it was Chris and Phil would like just shout out every single name they knew, like all at once. And Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You came up like every single time they push play. Babe, I'm gonna leave you. Days of Confusion. Like, they just shut them all out until they got the right one. So that's how I remember the name of Babe, I'm gonna leave you. Because they're like, as soon as some sound came out of the speaker, they started shouting out a name, hoping that they'd get it right. So that was funny. They obviously were really so funny. Babe, I'm gonna leave you. Yeah, so that, I love the dynamics in that song. So beautiful, almost ethereal at the beginning. Like some of this, listen, if you're not really a Zeppelin fan, you're not gonna think of this word that I'm gonna use. Some of this is really pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, it's beautiful. Your time is gonna come with all the organ and everything, and Babe, I'm gonna leave you with the kind of background vocalization, not words, but just kind of ahs by Robert Plant in the beginning of Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You. It's really pretty. It's almost haunting. And then they come in with the hard... John Bonham is known for being a hard-hitting drummer.
Hard to... what is the word that I'm looking
for? Emulate.
Emulate, yes, thank you. That's exactly the word.
Yes, hard-hitting drummer, but not a simple drummer.
No.
Like, he does some complicated things in terms of the fills and the timing.
Yeah.
But he's hard on the hi-hat. Like, mm-hmm. those 1, 2, 3, 4s on the hi-hats are like, he must have just beat the crap out of his sticks and his kicks because he hits hard. Yeah. So when he comes in this song and everyone else, it's like, boom, you know, you're just like kind of sinking into your chair listening to this beautiful finger picking, and then you're just like, bam, you know, it's great.
I heard read something this week about the production of this album, and the article that I was reading mentioned that this was one of the first bands to not just put the mic right up to the instrument or the speaker or the piece of drum equipment, but to also mic the room. And so it gave this like dual tone where you get each thing they're recording, they would have a mic, like say a mic right against the amp and a mic back from the guitar. So that you were getting kind of the way the sound moved through the room.
Cool.
And I wonder if that makes the drumming especially, but also the whole rest of the album just feel like that much more impressive, and you know, it encompasses you because of the way, I think, the structure of the way that it was recorded.
So you'd have multiple tracks for each instrument. Like, you'd have the guitar playing, you'd have like, you know, guitar track one, which was by the amp, and guitar track two, which is the microphone, you know, on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
And you'd layer those over top of each other. That's really cool. What a neat effect. We can do all that with the push of a button now.
Yeah, right.
But they didn't have that luxury. They had to get innovative. And wow, I love that. I love stuff like that because it's like making do with what you have to create and enhance your art.
Yep.
I love it. And I think that's one of the things that makes this album so special.
Yeah. On to track three. Yeah.
Okay, track three. You Shook Me. This is a song, I don't know why... maybe it's because there's other, like, You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC. I can never remember how this one goes. But this is like a heavy blues track. Yeah. Starts with the slide, like slide guitar, Jimmy Page. But this is like your classic blues song. And I can imagine that if you're not so sure that you're ready to switch over yet from, you know, your 60s blues stuff and folk rock, but you picked up this album... You get the first two tracks and you're like, well, I don't know. But then you get, oh, okay, this is what I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, you have to do that. Isn't that clever?
Yeah.
I want to say that it's intentional.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just because, like, that's what they were familiar with as artists, too.
Yeah.
That that's what Page came from. And, you know, we know he could play lots of other stuff. And, like, they were writing some really progressive things. But to do these blues tracks.
Yeah.
And the vocal performances here. Good grief.
Yeah.
Like, just... just out of this world vocal performance. Just crazy.
It's worth pointing out again that this was a song made popular by Muddy Waters, but it was written by Willie Dixon, who also wrote I Can't Quit You, Baby. It's got a long track record. I think Willie Dixon wrote it in like the 40s or 50s. So, it's an interesting choice for a, you know, Like, what did your relatives call it? Heavy metal or hard rock?
Hard rock.
Hard rock, right? This doesn't sound like hard rock. This sounds like a sort of a rock take on a blues song, which I guess it is.
Yeah, it's bluesy rock with... not a typical blues vocalist, right? Like, yeah. This isn't, I don't want to do the race thing, but you know, this is not an old black man from the Delta.
Right.
We can tell that by hearing it. It's a young white guy. We know that by listening to it.
Yep.
And it sounds really good. I also want to point out Robert Plant, not only on the vocals here, but the harmonica.
Huh.
That's him on the harp, and not too shabby.
Interesting.
Oh, great screaming. Rock and roll screams. Like we just talked about The Who.
Yeah.
And I love, like, you know, Won't Get Fooled Again, all these Roger Daltrey's screams, like these great rock and roll screams.
Yeah.
And Robert Plant's is a little different.
Yeah.
Really different. Less of a yell and a scream, more of a wail. It's great. So great.
I will say, I like this as an interlude. I think if they had 9 tracks of this kind of rock version of blues, it would end up... I don't want to say I'd feel bored, but I think it'd be a little bit like the Rolling Stones album or the Chuck Berry album, where it'd be like, okay, yeah, I get what you're doing here, but give me something else. and so I'm glad that this is kind of a one-off. I like it, but I don't think I would like a whole album of this.
I think they would have disappeared in the ether if that's what it had been.
Yeah.
Because even with as impressive as all the performances are, I think a whole album of this would have been,
yeah,
that was good and it was kind of new, but it's just blues, yep. Right, guys?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, it's not 70s rock. Yeah. Also, this is the introduction of organ on the album. We're going to hear a lot of organ on the album, and throughout their career, John Paul Jones will establish that organ is a very important part of Led Zeppelin. We're going to hear it in a lot of songs throughout the years, and it really, a lot of people, my son said this today, is that organ? What are we listening to? Is that organ? Oh, we're listening to Rush and their synthesizer. That seems like an interesting instrument to use in a rock band. Do many bands use organ? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, that doesn't seem... I was like, no, it just rounds out the sound. Like I said, like Led Zeppelin uses organs, and listed all these bands. Rush, Pink Floyd, like all these bands that use tons of organ in their music. I said, oh no, it's like, it's really important. And when you think about it, start going through them, so many have the organ there. It's a really important part.
There's a point in You Shook Me where it's kind of like a guitar solo, but John Bonham does some kind of crazy drum fill in there too. And the stereo mix, I don't know if you've listened to this with headphones on, but it moves around from side to side, almost like you can imagine him playing from one side of the kit to the other. It's really fascinating that that they mixed it that way. This was one of the first albums only to be available on stereo. Up until this point, well, originally stuff would come out in mono, and then there was a period of time where you would go into the record store and you'd have to choose whether you were buying the mono or the stereo version.
Oh, wow.
And this is a turning point in music history where they're saying, nope, we're just doing stereo for you this time.
Nice.
And there's some really fun little effects like that where they play with that technology and include it in the music.
Man, can you imagine, like, coming home thinking you've got, like, for your massive stereo system, thinking you bought the stereo and you've got the mono for, like, you know, Pink Floyd or something, and putting it on, and, or, you know, obviously something earlier, being like, oh, man, it's mono. Maybe it's just nerds like me who would be totally like, oh, man, I got ripped off. Track 4?
Yeah.
Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, my rock and roll history is failing me, but we hear right away, we hear the wah-wah pedal.
Ooh.
Had to be a wah-wah-wah-wah-wah. So I'm not sure when that becomes prominent in rock and roll. I don't think this was the first time, but to have that sound right at the opening, and it's so eerie, you know, this just the beginning with the boom boom,
yeah,
boom, boom, boom. It's like, it's almost like a okay kids, we're gonna play a spooky yeah. track, you know, like but it sets that tone, like, and the lyrics are, I remember as a kid being a little disturbed by the lyrics, you know, a little dark, like, well, like, you know, you and I grew up in,
yeah,
in church backgrounds, like talking about, you know, demons and the devil and hell, and it's like, ooh, that's, ooh, this song sounds cool, but I don't know about that stuff. Like, you know, we took it pretty seriously, yeah. So it was like, it, some of it is playful,
but it does sound psychedelic, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a great bridge, because this, I mean, this album doesn't sound like 60s rock to me, 60s psychedelic rock, but there's that nice yeah. little touch as we're moving into full-blown hard 70s yeah. rock. We got a little bit of that, kind of, which is
almost
nice.
A Doors sound on this one.
Sure. Yes. Hey, yeah, great comparison. I like that.
Do you think that they knew they were writing for an early 90s comedy movie when they wrote this?
I knew that was going to come up, but no, I don't think there's that association. I considered it, but I guess too, when like everyone around you is probably smoking up, it's like not really a big deal. Maybe,
right.
I don't know. This was a song for years. Again, Q107 back in the like 2000s. Always, I think it was always on Labor Day weekend. They would do kind of like a Survivor series for songs. So they'd start like on Thursday or Friday, and every hour there would be two songs, and you had to call in or go online and vote. And eventually, at the end of the weekend, like on the Monday, you'd be down to just two. And Dazed and Confused won many years in a row as being like the number one rock and roll song. Like it kept just beating out every other song, which is very interesting to me, because yeah. it's a good song, but it's like, how did that happen? But I yeah. guess for rock and roll fans, it's like still really, really cool. Again, not a single.
Right. It's way too long
at all.
For just, a single, I guess.
Way too long. And also, you know, it got radio play later, and I guess just became a staple. I mean, eventually, if people just keep calling in and asking for songs we played, eventually you just play them, right?
Yeah.
Like, so this just becomes one of the ones you play. I still hear it on the radio to this day. So, yeah, Dazed and Confused was one that I knew from earlier on. And to me, yeah, an interesting song, dark, mysterious, lots of really interesting sounds, and very, very, again, very, it's got that little bit of psychedelic, but very new. And that line, you know, lots of people talk and few of them know, soul of the woman was created below. It's like, ooh, ouch. Like,
yeah.
Like, don't let my wife hear me listening to this. You know, like, you know, it's tongue in cheek. I'm not going to take it seriously, but that's a doozy. That's one heck of a line.
It is.
But can you imagine, like, you know, you're lying in your bed absolutely heartbroken and you hear that line and you're like, yeah, man, I hear you. Like, I'm there, dude. You know, like, I'm sure all guys have been there at some point. Like, absolutely. I agree. Dazed and Confused. Good tune.
Yeah. It's got songs within it too. I mean, it changes its style a couple times.
Yeah. Too,
which is a sort of Zeppelin marquee, I guess. The
when it picks up the tempo, you know, it totally changes, right?
Yep.
If you played the beginning and that side by side, you would never guess that that's the same tune.
Yep.
Yeah, and a lot of really interesting production here and mixing and stuff. So that is the end of side one. So interesting. And then side two opens up with Your Time Is Going to Come, which opens with all organ. Beautiful organ of John Paul Jones. Like, it's so diverse.
Yeah.
You know? And at no point am I going, oh, this album's a mess. It's all over the place.
Right. It all fits somehow.
Said no one ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's all so great. It's almost like here's a tie-in, a Procol Harum thing. And they actually did have a guy from Procol Harum touring with them on that 68 tour. So there you go. Maybe that was some influence there.
I don't know Procol Harum.
Whiter Shade of Pale? We skipped the light fandango. No, you don't know that?
I do know that now. It took a couple of bars.
Oh, how did you get there? When we visited you in Harrisonburg, we went to see a duo called Over the Rhine, and halfway through, we were in the Ryman Auditorium, and there's that beautiful pipe organ. Halfway through, he jumped from the piano over to the organ to play a few tracks, and he started playing that song before playing the first track on organ.
Man, good memory.
Do you remember that?
Good memory. I wouldn't have been able to
remember that. I have a ridiculous memory. I can't remember to pick up my underwear from the bathroom floor, but I can remember that stuff.
Wow.
That was a good concert, by the way. You know that song, Whiter Shade of Pale.
Just keep going.
Doesn't the opening of Your Time's Gonna Come kind of remind you of that a bit? I guess not. If you can't really remember it, then I guess.
Yeah, I guess it kind of does. Anyways. Yeah. It's just not a band name or song that I had any connection to.
I think you said yes. I think that was just bullying. I just bullied you into saying, yeah, Mike. Yeah, I remember it. Let's keep going.
Yeah, it's a neat song. I like this one. It doesn't sound like anything else in the album, really. But again, it fits for some reason.
Well, you talked about, you mentioned a word at the beginning is the hook.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs, although they're grandiose and have a lot of things, there are hooks.
Yeah.
And this, you know, on the chorus, your time is gonna come. You know, yeah. Like everyone can sing that.
Earworm.
You know, it's simple. It's easy.
Stuck.
Beer glasses raised in the air, yeah. You know, like anthemic, as they say.
Right.
Again, great, you know, there's the organ, there's finger picking, there's like, it's just so many things. Man, I'm really, just really gushing right now. Like, it's one of those, it's like when we listen to Hendrix, it's like I knew the music and I listened to it before and I knew I liked it, but I put it on, it's like, I forgot how much I like it.
Yeah.
You know, how much, I'm just right into it. So good.
Totally, totally feel that, yeah.
That has been a great, and I don't want to jump the gun, but that has been a great contrast and balance in this project.
Yeah.
Listening new stuff that it's like, I've never heard this before, and now I love it. And the old stuff that it's like, oh, it's great memories. You know, I've listened, there's an upcoming album that I listened to for the very first time, you know, just a few weeks ago, and I'm absolutely loving it. So that's a preview. And then stuff here that I've heard before. And I love
it. I think that's also my biggest disappointment with this project, is that I expected these feelings to be, you know, well into the hundreds. I thought we just kind of, I thought every album, if it's at the top of a greatest hits, a greatest albums list, should be that way. Even if I'm not familiar with it, it should pull me in. I should be like, oh, this is why this is so great. And we've had a few that's not been the case. I don't think we've had anything where I've thought, man, there is no value here. but there's been lots that I've been like, meh, it's okay. I can see how someone would like it. But I think Hendrix and this album are two great examples of stuff that I was not familiar with, but there were familiar songs. And even the ones that I didn't know, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this builds out to be a really fantastic album. Speaking of songs I didn't know but are just fantastic, this next track, another song that just Black Mountain Side, which is the location of the slide. Yes.
So did you feel like you were listening to the Beatles again?
I can see why you'd say that.
With the, you know, all the tabla and even the way he's playing guitar, almost the strings almost sound like a sitar.
But there's something different about this that doesn't make me right away think Indian music. I don't know why. There's Indian sounds in it. I think it's the way he's playing the guitar. It makes me think of guitar virtuosos right away.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's a like obscure artist who came to our university. I'm even blanking on his name. It was something McCutcheon, I think. He was fantastic and did a lot of the like finger picking on a 12-string guitar, but with some like tonal muting and stuff too. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff. Like, yep. I think take away the drums in the background, it still would be a fantastic song. Just the guitar by itself.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a blending of like blues, country. In the middle is a little break where he does it, and it's almost flamenco style.
Yep.
And a bit of that Eastern sound as well. Like it's a big,
really pretty
kind of guitar solo performance with some other stuff. Yeah. Really neat. Really neat in there.
We move from that one into maybe the other song that could have been a single, you know, 2 minutes, 30 seconds long. It feels a lot like Good Times, Bad Times.
Yeah.
Communication Breakdown. Faster paced, kind of sounds the same throughout. They're not going on different tangents.
This is what I think of when I didn't know Zeppelin that well. This was like, to me, stereotypical Zeppelin. You know, like just like,
and some really, you know, like wailing high pitched vocals too.
Now I have confirmed this was the B-side
of Good Times, Bad Times.
Of Good Times, Bad Times. Yeah. So it was a 45. So on one side you had Good Times, Bad Times. The other side was Communication Breakdown. So it was on the single and also on the album. So these, you know, I don't really know this, so you could maybe cut this, but you're at the record player and you're at the radio station. You've got the 45. Like, someone's going to flip it over and go, well, what's on the other side here? Like, guys, we got to play this, you know, like, like we've got it here. We got to play this. They're going to want to hear this, you know, like, you know, it's right there. Yeah. I can imagine it happening like that, too. Well,
maybe I'm giving Dylan a break tonight. I feel like I'm picking on the Stones a lot. But this song makes me think, what if John Bonham had been the drummer of the Stones? Because this is a fairly simple, you know, bluesy rock song, but his drumming just makes it like way, way different than that. I think the guitar parts, guitar and bass, are something I could have imagined the Stones doing. But the drums just take it to a whole another level. I guess the vocals too, maybe his vocals are pretty impressive as well. But
well, Charlie Watts is a great drummer, and he's a jazz drummer.
Yeah.
He plays it jazz, you know, traditional style, holding the sticks.
Yep.
He plays usually a very stripped down kit. You know, yeah, if John Bonham was in the Stones, holy moly. you know, Animal from the Muppets. Like, that's what I think of when I listen to the music. Right. I think of a guy just like going nuts. Like, I mean, really, Animal was Keith Moon. That's Animal. but like, watch him play. He's really just flying all over the place. Eyes bugging out of his head. But yeah, just
it's impressive.
And even between, dun, 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 he's hitting the cymbals on those guitar hits between like the palm muting. So any other drummer just keeps playing, right? But he stops, and you know, the your cymbals, like, imagine, visualize it. Your cymbals are way up above. You have to extend your arms all the way to hit them.
Yeah.
So it's like this very physical thing. To psh, 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 you know, it's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh man. And then solos and like, ah, oh, so good. Oh, I'm out of breath. I'm so excited. And I know you've mentioned before, that a lot of times when we're recording, you know, that you'll have, some of the songs playing in your headphones as you're talking. And it wasn't until very recently you mentioned that I haven't been doing that. So now I'm starting to do that. I'm very much a single task kind of person, but I've started doing that a little more, and I've been doing that a lot during this episode. So, that's also got me like really jacked.
Well, do you need to take a break
to kind of
get a drink of water, wipe off the
sweat? No, I'm good, man. Okay. I'm good. I had a big glass of Dr. Pepper before we started, so I'm good. Product placement, little plug there. We can get some Pepsi money. But two more to go.
Yeah, and we change moods two more times.
You know what? I thought you were joking when you said, you know, let's talk about every one. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I was like, oh no, you know what? That's a really good idea. We should do that. I Can't Quit You, Baby.
Thanks.
So Mike. Another Dixon, Willie Dixon classic. Oh, you're welcome. I hope the feeling's mutual.
Indeed.
Can you get an audio clip of that? The clap. I can't quit you. Yeah, that kind of thing.
This feels similar to You Shook Me, which it should, I guess, written by the same guy.
See, I get them mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, and I like them both, but I think they are the tracks. If you told me to cut two, those are probably the tracks I'd cut first. Interesting, they're not their songs, and they're great renditions of songs, but I want to hear more Zeppelin.
I agree with you. I love the bridge between the old and the new. You know, this is not only for the musicians but also for the audiences, and again, I think this is really gonna, I'm speculating, but I imagine this really brought a lot of people over from the blues or kind of the folk, some more folk rock, a little lighter. You know, one thing about Woodstock, you know, artists like Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson doing more electric, and that really being controversial for a lot of fans. So, which was in the same year, 69. So I think still people are finding that change difficult to move from kind of an acoustic sound to an electric sound. They bridged the gap very well here, and I think it was a very smart move to do these classics in here in their own way. I could see, I definitely see what you're saying, that they don't always feel like they totally fit, but it's also a great break. Like, you can't do Communication Breakdown and Good Times Bad Times for the whole album. Like, you're going to be exhausted, you know, like your brain, you need a break from that. You need the blues ones and the Dazed and Confused that slow down a bit, and the Your Time Is Going to Come, you know, you need that for balance. And it's great. But yeah, you know, classic, you know, but again, and they get to show their chops on, you know, the blues, crazy blues solos and the blues drumming and all the fills and Robert Plant's like just long wailing, you know, it's like, oh, so cool.
Yeah.
Great. This last track, How Many More Times? I love the drumming in this song. And to me, this is the jazziest rock song I think I can hear of. Like, they're either you're playing a rock song or it's a rock band playing a jazz song. Like, I think of, like, you know, like BTO, Randy Bachman doing, like, Looking Out for Number One. You know that? Mm-hmm. Looking Out for... That's just a jazz... That's just a rock band doing a jazz song. It's a good song. Right. This is a jazzy rock song. Listen to the drums.
Yeah.
Like, that is...
And really, until the buzzing guitar comes in... you know, 30 seconds into the song, it almost sounds like the introduction to, like, Pink Panther or something like that. Like, It's like kind of sultry jazz too.
Yep. A little bit of theory here. Oh, and I love it again. Wah wah and wah wah wah. Oh, so cool. The jazz is traditionally the emphasis are on beats 1 and 3. Rock and roll is 2 and 4. Okay, so that's rock and roll. Jazz is 1 and 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, like that's and that's this song. Okay, so like this is a jazz. It's not a jazz song, but it's very, very jazzy feel.
Yeah,
which is different again. It's not blues, you know, and no one, I think, no rock fan, I think, is really gonna go like, I don't like that one. It's a jazz song, you know. Like it's not. It's not a jazz song, and I don't think you'd be turned off to it, but it is so jazzy in the way it's executed.
Yeah.
Yet they blend in all that great rock stuff with the guitar coming in. He's hitting harder, but he's still swinging. And that's one thing I like about John Bonham's drumming is on the bridge in Dazed and Confused, and this one, he swings very hard. You know what I mean when I say when I say the drummer swinging, right? Mm-hmm. And for some of our listeners, if I'm getting a little too geeky here, it's that where they you instead of just doing 1 2 1 2, you know, you swing it, you push it a little bit, and you can really hear that. It's more of a syncopated feel instead of just a straight quarter notes or eighth notes, and it's so great. And also, too, I love his versatility here, because I've always identified John Bonham as like a hard-hitting, straight up and down 4-4 drummer. And listening to this album has been a really good reminder for me that, yes, he's hard-hitting, but he's not just straight up 4-4. He can do it all, different styles. And even though he still brings that hard-hitting style in, he shows that he can do all these other things, too. So this is, I think... the whole album really showcases John Bonham on drums, and this is one of the songs where he really shows.
Well, and he does like a dozen different techniques in this song too. There's like a military march portion right in the middle.
Yeah.
Some like 4-4 drumming too as well. Like, it. I mean, it's an 8.5 minute long song, so it's going to change, especially with Zeppelin. But you know, you could kind of hold this up as like. Here's everything John Bonham is capable of in one song, and he's, you know, and there's other stuff too, but here's a good sort of snapshot of what his capacity is.
Yeah. We did it. We talked about everyone, every song, one at a time.
Wow.
We haven't done that in a while. When was the last time we did that? I feel like we did it for Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
Just,
I think we
went
through everyone on that
you're
one.
Right. Yeah.
And we've kind of, I think, shied away from it. But sometimes you just can't help it.
Yeah, and I think, so I started this episode kind of with that philosophical question, why this album as opposed to any of their other great ones this high up as the first time we see them on this list. And actually, I think going through it track by track gave me even more appreciation than I was getting preparing for this episode. I was hearing stuff from you that I hadn't picked up on before, and just being far more intentional about each track has given me a really great appreciation for this thing on its own, not just this thing representing Zeppelin, but Held Above.
Right.
I guess I still have some. I'm really looking forward, I guess, to the other Zeppelin albums that are on this list, because I'm still not exactly sure why the people who were surveyed picked this one as opposed to some of the others. But I totally get why it's on this list. This is a fantastic album, and one that I'm really, really deeply grateful to now say that I know a little bit and have spent some time with.
I want to speak to that. And one thing I want to do, and maybe I'll get this out for the time we released our reshuffle of 21 to 30. I want to do a chart charting how many albums we've talked about in the top 30 per year. And I want to look at like kind of a graph chart of that, because so many are like 1969, 1970. Like, and when we talk about who was polled for this list in 2003, a lot of these people were artists, and a lot of them were artists who were performing in the 60s and 70s, and other people who were in the industry at that time. And if you were a fan of the Yardbirds and CSNY and all these other bands, and then this band comes out, that is a monumental change and shift and moment in music history. And I could see that even if you're a big fan of all of Zeppelin's work, you're trying to pick, you know, you're making your list of 50, because they all had to pick 50, and you've decided you want to put some Zeppelin albums on there. Obviously, many of them chose to put this one higher. And I would think because of the mark it made on 70s rock music at that time, and maybe the mark it made on them when they heard it for the first time and, you know, had their ears explode because of what they were listening to and what had come before. Yeah. And like, just like, what is this? Just probably like, like when you hear Hendrix for the first time, you just go, oh my goodness, what is this? Like, how is he doing that?
And probably why you get some mixed reviews too. People just don't know how to handle it and can't imagine this disruptive sound becoming commonplace either.
So I like you, kind of wondered, and we'll get into, was it Sound Logic, but I was a little surprised that Zeppelin 4 wasn't higher because so many really, really popular and massively overplayed songs. But if this list is also coming from a place of, you know, influence and how people were affected by it long before Zeppelin 4 came out, then I think this one takes its place. You know, I'm having more of an understanding, having gone through it even here with you and talking about it and listening to it, of how just monumental it is. So I think that might be an explanation.
Yeah, especially I'm imagining that a lot of the people who they were surveying were boomers who would have actually remembered what it was like to have this song, this album come out and change music. And they understand a world without Zeppelin and a world with Zeppelin. And I think that's why you probably elevate, because you're not really critically thinking about their entire catalog. You're imagining, you know, that moment in time where you first heard this debut. It's just a different kind of way of looking at it, I guess.
I agree. A few just general comments before we move on. And I said before, this, you know, this album, I think, to me, paved the way for 70s rock. If you had asked me, you know, listen to this and tell me what year it comes from, I would never say 1969. Yeah. I would say mid 70s, because so ahead of their time. And great segue into, is this album still relevant? There's a band that's come out in the last few years that I think almost everybody knows about now, called Greta Van Fleet. Are you familiar?
Nope.
What? Oh, I thought I was asking a rhetorical question. Have you heard Greta Van Fleet?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
You're going to stop right now.
I
go to YouTube.
I will.
Right now.
I'm on Spotify. Really?
They're from Detroit. I thought you guys would be all over this.
I mean, people are. They've got a track with 67 million listens on Spotify.
Okay, Highway Tune was the first one. And when this came out, people lost their minds.
Who are these people?
Like everybody, because they're like, this is
Zeppelin.
This is Zeppelin. They're like, this is Zeppelin again.
Yeah.
And these guys are like 20. Like, this guy's like 20.
Yeah, it totally sounds like Zeppelin. I sound like an old man who doesn't know anything right now, but yeah.
And it's weird, you know, I'm watching the music video right now, and I've never actually seen these people. I've heard them, and man, they're young. Holy moly, they're young.
and they sound amazing. They sound so much like Zeppelin, and people are eating it up. Like, they just exploded. They didn't release an album for a year, year and a half after this song came out, because I don't think they had recorded much anything else. But this song was just like, I think I read something and everyone was like, you got to get this out right now. Like, you have to put this song on the radio because it is insane. And then, you know, they started releasing other singles, and eventually they did put an album out. It's called The March of the Peaceful Army, and it came out last year, I think. And it's, I've listened to some of it, and there's like five or six singles on the radio, and they're all pretty good. And they have been criticized a bit for sounding too much like Zeppelin. And I think they're going to have to branch out. Well, it's like, if you listen to 1974, if you listen to Rush's first album, it's very Zeppelin. It's very Zeppelin. It's before Neil Peart. They had a different drummer for the first album, so it was before Neil Peart. And then everything after that, like, that got them in the door. And then everything after that is Rush, you know. But I think same with Greta Van Fleet. They're going to have to do something a little bit different. But it's, a great reminder that everybody still loves this sound, because they're almost totally emulating.
I think about Aerosmith's Dream On when I think about similar kinds of sounds.
I thought it was Zeppelin for years.
Sorry to say. But that was also early in their careers, too,
that's
right?
Early stuff.
They're kind of copying that sound, getting their foot in the door before they sort of find their unique Aerosmith sound, whatever that is. Well, I'm going to have to check out this newfangled music it's from you young people.
it's worth a listen. And I mean, like, right away, right from the top, from the guitar to the first, like, because he starts the song wailing, like, right the way, you're like, Zeppelin? Like, and I think some people thought it was like old Zeppelin that somebody dug up. Like, what is this? Because he's got it bang on. But it's good. It's really good stuff, and it's definitely worth a listen. And again, like, is it relevant? Heck yes, because everyone's still doing it. Like, we got a band that is almost note for note doing Zeppelin, and people are just eating it up. So,
yeah. Well, and I think they're too diverse to, like, pigeonhole them. Like, I think if the whole, like... I guess if you pick a track from this album and say, you know, the whole album is going to sound like this one track, it'd be a lot easier to say, yeah, it sounds dated now. But there's too much going on here.
Well, and you know, if it's like, okay, it's the early 2000s, like, well, we don't really use organs anymore, you know, on rock. Well, okay. So then there's like seven other tracks that don't really have it, you know, or, well, we don't really finger pick right now. Everything's heavy. Okay. Well, there's like, you know, you're right. The diversity of it keeps it relevant, because if a aspect of it has lost relevancy, there's something else.
Yep.
And, how great.
And unlike some other bands at this time, no one here is being carried by the rest of the band. They're all so flippin' talented. all four of them. And I think that means that the drumming community will point to John Bonham. The guitar community will point, you know, to the guitar work on this album. Even the bass playing, I think, is, you know, if you're a bass player, you're probably at least trying to figure out whether this is a sound you want to maybe incorporate. So,
playing. If not for the bass playing, the organ playing of John Paul Jones.
I was going to say the swagger of the lead singer too. Like, I mean, even though we can't see him while we're listening, we can tell how into it he is. And all of those attributes are things that I think rock stars are aiming for today. So, yeah, absolutely. This may be one of the more relevant albums that we've tackled so far.
I don't think it sounds terribly dated.
I think there are moments in time, maybe the most dated song might be Dazed and Confused, because it does sound psychedelic. It sounds like it's from a certain era.
I think recording quality and technology
maybe a little.
we're way better at recording drums. There's the guitar sounds today are a lot cleaner. And I think the bass is processed a little differently. That being said, like, yeah, you can say, okay, this probably didn't come out in the 90s because of the just the quality. And by quality, I don't mean it's better now. It's just more refined now. And it's a different, cleaner sound. Doesn't necessarily mean better. You can just identify it as, well, this was, you know, 70s or 60s, right? Doesn't sound like stuff from the early 60s.
Yeah.
You know, like even in that decade, the technology has changed and it sounds great. I don't think it's very dated. And again, we've talked about this. Jason Crane started this. The instruments are all played to this day and many of them in the same way. You're going to be using the same organ sound. You're going to be using a lot of the same guitar sounds, bass, the same types of drum kits. You know, people still wail and sing like that. So we're still doing it like that. So of course it's relevant. It's not going to sound dated. So two positives there.
Yeah.
Was this sound logic to go at 29?
Yeah. And I think the only reason I'm hesitating is because I want to go through their entire catalog to figure out whether this one is the one that should be on top. I feel like it needs to go higher, but I don't want to put it too high at the risk of like then needing to put the other Zeppelin albums ahead of it. You know what I mean? And so I'm feeling some of that tension. Yeah. I feel like it's similar to the Beatles where like, you know, if you put one up too high, then you end up liking the next one even more, then it bumps that one up even higher. And, we almost have to listen to an entire band's career before we can really say for sure. But this one needs to be higher. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
I agree with you. I mean, we're going to get it. You can go do that on your own. We're going to get to three more Zeppelin albums before we get to number 80. And I think that says something too. We've talked about other bands, the Stones, the Who, U2 that have other albums on this list, but they're way spread out. Like there's one in the 200s, there's one in the 400s. These are
packed.
Yes, the first one is until 29, but then there's like a lot more that are grouped. They're all grouped. The next three that we talk about are 10 apart from each other. Like all three, there's only like 69, 73, and 79. So they're all right there. So someone's saying like, well, these are all great, but you know, we're just not. I think 29 is pretty close. And I think the only reason I would say it's pretty close is because of what we talked about earlier, the hard rock aspect of this, I think makes it slightly less accessible for some demographics. Okay. It was so hard and so heavy. And I think that counts out a few people, the people who know this and love it, like absolutely love it. And I think there's other people who don't really want to touch it. And I'm not just talking about, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the religious stuff and there were rumors about, you know, the bands and, you know, selling their soul to the devil and stuff like that. Not just that, but I think also the sonic quality as well was like a little too much, too intimidating for people. I think that maybe it's less accessible than the Beatles. It's less accessible than Beach Boys, Pet Sounds and other things we've talked about.
That's a good point.
And it kind of slaps you in the face. So, if it wasn't for that, I think it should be a little higher. Again, I think at least one more, probably a few more. And I think too, because, you know, there was only one single and it gained popularity over time, over years, maybe even decades. I think it gained steam. And even though it was revolutionary and affected the music, I don't think it necessarily hit the masses till a lot later. So I think that's another reason. So I think 29 is not too bad here. I would put it a little closer to number one, but probably not too much. I think not bad.
Well,
a solid B plus grading.
We've already referenced that they're on this list a few more times. We may as well give you some specifics here.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin 4 comes in at number 69. Number 73, we have Physical Graffiti. Number 79, Led Zeppelin 2. And number 148 is Houses of the Holy. So you're right. Five albums in the top 150. It's somewhat right. interesting to me, I guess. They've got more albums than that, that none of the rest make it from 148 to 500. But why isn't 3 on this list?
I do not know why Zeppelin 3 isn't on this list, because it's very, very good.
It's very good.
And I'm not even that familiar with Physical Graffiti, to be honest. Three is good. Three took me a little longer to warm up to, and I don't think it has some of the popular hits on it that some of the other one has.
It's got Immigrant Song. Yeah, it might be the only one that's definitely
that
known
might
by
be
people.
See Celebration Day. Friends is another good one. Yeah, I think it might not have just been as commercially successful as the other ones. And that, you know, that again, the only one single, right?
Yeah.
Immigrant Song. And that was the way they did it. And they toured and like people loved them live. But I think, you know, the popularity and the reception and the success of the album also factors into it too. So maybe that's why. Also, if you're doing your top 50, that's challenging. You know, if you're a big Zeppelin fan, but you've got to pick your favorites. Yep. I could see that 3 might not be everyone's favorite. 4, yes. 1, yes. 2's fantastic. Like, you know, wow. Just crazy. But yeah, it's very good. So that's it for Led Zeppelin 1, a.k.a. Led Zeppelin by Led Zeppelin, a.k.a. the New Yardbirds.
Well said.
And we want to thank you for sticking with us and listening as we get closer to finishing another decade, as you will, as we move on to album number 30 on Rolling Stone's Top 500, which is Blue by our first Canadian on the list, Joni Mitchell.
And first female artist.
It's a double whammy.
Yeah.
And we'll have a very, very special guest coming up as well.
Awesome. I'm looking forward. Thanks again, my friend.
Thank you. And to all of you, we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that classic episode of ours. Tune in next time for the next album on the new 2020 Rolling Stone list.